The Locked On Giants podcast is brought to you in part by BlueChew.com. Visit BlueChew.com for more information and to take advantage of their special offer for Locked On Giants listeners. Enter the promo code Locked On at checkout to get your first shipment for only $5 shipping and handling. That's BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com.
You are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans. Welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. My name's Patricia Traina. I cover your New York Giants for a variety of places. Follow me on Twitter at Patricia_Traina. You can find links to all my work. You can participate in our weekly mailbag by tagging your questions, Ask P Train, or if you just want to talk in general about life, football, the U.S. soccer, the Women's World Cup, whatever you want to talk about, drop me a line. Always appreciate and enjoy hearing from you guys, and we'll talk whatever you want. So speaking of talk, we're continuing our off-season series in which we preview the Giants 2019 opponents, and I've been bringing on Locked On podcasts hosts from other teams because they know their teams really well and they have done a fantastic job. And today's guest does a fantastic job. He covers the Chicago Bears. His name is Lauren Cox. And Lauren, thank you so much for joining me on the program.
Hey, I appreciate you having me on. Always down to talk some football.
All right. Awesome. So, Lauren, let's start off, if we could, with a general question. I mean, some changes on the Bears, as with any team, you know, some free agent losses, some free agent gains. Pinpoint for me, if you will, the key losses and gains on each side of the ball.
Well, I think the biggest one is the defensive coordinator, Vic Fangio, hired by the Denver Broncos to be their head coach, replacing him with Chuck Pagano. And there's some expectation that things are supposed to bridge smoothly and that Chuck Pagano is going to step in and try and pick up generally where Vic Fangio left off, maybe make a few tweaks here and there, add his own flavor, his own spin to a few things. But largely, you know, he's got, I believe, 9 out of 11 defensive starters returning, you know, when you count the slot cornerback position as a starter, but the entire front seven, both starting outside cornerbacks and one of your safeties. And then your two big changes defensively as far as players go, in is HaHa Clinton Dix, out is Adrian Amos, and then Buster Skrine came over from the New York Jets to play that slot cornerback position. But other than that, this is a team that generally feels like, okay, they want to run it back from last year. You know, they felt like in that Eagles wild card playoff loss, they were kind of a kicker away from advancing to that game, although there's some other things went wrong in that wild card game as well. But kicker position still quite a bit up in the air, and they've added a couple more young pieces offensively in the draft, David Montgomery at running back, Riley Ridley at wide receiver. But like I said, this is a team trying to just pick up where they left off last year and hope that the young players developing another year in Matt Nagy's system will be enough to put them over the top.
You know, since you mentioned the addition of Chuck Pagano, let's stay there if we could. What do you anticipate is going to, you know, how's that defense going to change, if at all, under Pagano? Because that was a pretty good defense last year as it was. So, I mean, how do they make it better or how does it change?
Yeah, it's going to be hard for Chuck Pagano to keep them at the number one defense in the NFL, at least statistically there. And they far and away led the NFL in turnovers with 27. I don't think a team had 27 turnovers in a season since the – or 27 interceptions, excuse me, since the 2013 Seahawks Legion of Boom. So there's going to be some, you know, coming back down to earth a little bit there. But what the exact changes are, I think, is what we're still waiting to see. I think the big thing is going to be how the safeties are used, because Eddie Jackson is that free safety, that guy deep on the back end, a lot of range, great ball skills, and really kind of establishing himself as one of the better young players at that position. And Adrian Amos was sort of the box safety, the Landon Collins type role. But when they bring in a guy like HaHa Clinton Dix, who's also known a bit more in that free safety Eddie Jackson role, the question becomes, okay, are you going to have to take one of them and put them in the box more? Are you going to play with more two deep safeties? How are you going to get those two guys to coexist and be able to maximize both of their strengths while minimizing some of their weaknesses, perhaps in, you know, in run defense or tackling and coming up and being physical? So I think the safeties are a big potential area of change. And then I think some different looks in the front seven, not in terms of personnel, but in terms of where they line up. Vic Fangio was a guy that he would do some different formations, but a lot of what he would do is they would line up and that's how they would stay. And then they may stunt after the snap, but pre-snap, not a lot of misdirection. But what Chuck Pagano does, he does what's called stemming, where, you know, the whole front seven lines up, and then once you get to a certain number of seconds on the play clock or once the quarterback gets set, then the defense makes a call and everybody shifts to a slightly new position to make the quarterback have to make a last second read, make the offensive line have to change their protections at the last second. And the idea being to create some more of that sort of misdirection and harder for the offense to read. So I think we'll see a little bit more creativity like that in the front end, still up in the air of what's going to happen on the back end.
Now, last year, you guys acquired Khalil Mack from the Raiders in a blockbuster trade. Is it too soon to say whether or not that was a good deal for both sides, or especially for the Bears? I mean, you know, because this is a guy who was a premier pass rusher, came over, didn't have really training camp with the Bears. But I think he still was up there. I don't remember exactly where he finished, but he ranked up there in sacks and pressures. I mean, are you happy with that deal, you know, months later and the direction, especially the return and whatnot?
Yeah, this is a deal that's had some split between sort of like the football community and the analytics community, because I think it was MIT's Sloan Conference says that the Raiders won that deal because of the massive draft compensation that they received, and that generally the value of all those draft picks can and usually does outweigh the value of any one non-quarterback individual on the field. But as far as the Chicago Bears go, they have been, you know, no second thoughts, absolutely thrilled with everything Khalil Mack has provided them. He's the tone setter on the defense, obviously the dominant pass rusher that he is, but also phenomenal in run defense too. You know, generated some turnovers last season, really played really well against the Green Bay Packers, which always endears Bears fans as well. So there have been no second guessing, no hesitating, no doubts about Khalil Mack. I think even though the compensation was enormous and the contract he received was the biggest of any defensive player in NFL history up to that point, I think for the short term, the Bears feel like they've won this trade. Maybe when we get to the end of that, you know, 5-year contract and his cap hit is pretty high and the guaranteed money is paying a 30-plus-year-old Khalil Mack a lot of money, maybe by the time you get to the end, there's some lingering effects of that. But it was an all-in win-now move. It obviously wasn't quite enough last year, but the idea is to bring that into this year. And if he can help them pay off with a Super Bowl run, I think they'll be able to live with any consequences financially down the road.
Defensively speaking, where is the weak spot on this Bears defense?
I look at the slot cornerback position, Buster Skrine. I see him as a pretty significant downgrade from Bryce Callahan. But other than that, there's not a lot of areas where, you know, you see a glaring weakness. I think last season, when you saw the Bears defense struggle, it was often tied in with the offensive struggles. And when the defense couldn't get off the field, what was kind of in the plays when the offense couldn't sustain a drive. So this is a defense that seemed to get tired in long, especially in the second half. If the Bears come out of halftime with a 3-and-out and the defense has a longer drive, if you can just keep these guys on the field, the pass rush slows down. It keeps the secondary from being too aggressive, from jumping on passes, and that's where you can kind of see some weaknesses and some vulnerability there. But for the most part, this is a team that's pretty solid together. They know where they're going and what they can count on each and every player. So as long as they stay healthy, they're tough to crack.
I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier about the kicker and how some people believe the Bears were really one kicker away from beating the Eagles and moving on to, you know, the moving on in the postseason. Do you believe that in looking back and having had the offseason to digest it, or were the Bears missing elsewhere?
The Bears were missing elsewhere, but Cody Parkey also wasn't necessarily the answer at kicker, and I don't believe that they were just a kicker away, certainly not from the Super Bowl, maybe from winning that Eagles game, but Cody Parkey hit 3 field goals in the first half and third quarter of that game, and they only scored 1 touchdown offensively. I really think Cody Parkey was released not because of that missed game winner potentially, but actually because he went onto the Today Show in the week that followed, and the team was very upset about that. Matt Nagy said that, you know, that's a me, not a we move. And I think it was sort of that on top of the missed kick. But if he had just missed the kick and kind of gone off quietly, I think there would have been a decent chance that he stuck around. But instead, they're working with some former undrafted free agents and trying to find any and everybody that they can get to kick at the kicking position. But no, I mean, he hit like 75% of his field goals last year and hit some big ones, missed some bad ones. He was an average to below average kicker at best, but I didn't think he was the reason that kept them from really winning. I mean, they still went 12-4 with him, and they could have potentially done even more had they had maybe a little bit of a better offense and the defense did more than enough. But I think quarterback could have used a little bit of improvement at some times, and the running game wasn't always where it needed to be. So, no, I don't think they were just a kicker away, but a better kicker maybe could have gotten them a little farther.
In terms of, you know, the way they lost that game, I'm sure Bear fans and the Bears in general, they were very bitter, very disappointed. I mean, what's the mood there? Are they, you know, using that as motivation? Are they still kind of licking their wounds, so to speak? I mean, how have they responded this offseason to what happened to them?
They've been ultra focused on that missed field goal and sort of the end of that season. And I question whether it's almost to a fault or at what point do they need to kind of move on. I mean, it's not as though they're constantly bringing it up in interviews and stuff, but all offseason, whenever they've had kicker tryouts, Matt Nagy always has them attempt the, I believe, 43 yards, either 43 or 42, the exact kick that Cody Parkey missed. He's had all the kickers attempted at all their tryouts, and when they have public practices in front of minicamp, they'll end with the entire team comes off the field. They do what they call Augusta silence in reference to the Masters, where the whole field is a ghost town, and everyone's just standing there completely dead silent, and everyone's watching the kickers attempt that 43-yard field goal. And just last week, Tariq Cohen, the running back, said that Matt Nagy will play them the end of that game in their team meetings just to kind of remind them what they're coming off of and what they need to remember. You know, they've kind of emphasized feel that hurt and then use it as motivation. I just have questioned a little bit, okay, it's about to be July here. Training camp is right around the corner. At what point do you kind of move on? At what point are you stuck a little bit too much in the past? I mean, if it works, it works. And Matt Nagy knows his team's motivation more than anybody else, so he kind of gets the benefit of the doubt in that regard. But they've definitely not forgotten about it, and I don't think they will for some time.
You mentioned you're concerned that maybe it's to a fault. I mean, I don't know if you've been able to see the practices or whatnot, but are they kind of just taking it in stride? I mean, I would think, you know, if it were the Giants and seeing it over and over again, it'd be like, okay, you know, guys, look, you lost. Let's you know, leave the last year in the past. I mean,
yeah, it's and what bothers me about it, I think, is that it seems to be too focused on the kicker, like we talked about, making Cody Parkey that scapegoat almost. And not that they're completely ignoring the other things that went wrong in that game, but you know, when your offense scores 15 points, if I'm Matt Nagy, I look at the three times Mitchell Trubisky almost threw interceptions in that game that hit Eagles defenders in the hands and were dropped, or there was a particularly bad drive when the Bears had three penalties defensively, a defensive pass interference, a roughing the passer that bailed the Eagles out twice and allowed them to drive down and score a touchdown. And you know, there's a lot of little things you can go back through in that game and find, well, this should have done better, this should have done better. And when all they do is watch the kick and talk about the kick, to me it feels like, okay, Cody Parkey's gone. He's been gone since, I mean, technically he was designated a post June 1st release for salary cap purposes, but he's been gone for 4 months, and it continues to kind of be specifically about that kick when it should be more about, okay, the quarterback needs to get better, the offensive line can get better, the running game needs to be better, and the defense needs to be smarter. I mean, so many different things. At some point you have to make sure that all positions and all players are held responsible for what happened in that loss and not just the kicker.
Lauren, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you about the offense. Folks, we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back, Giant fans. You're with Patricia Train on Locked On Giants, and on the line with me is Lauren Cox. He is the host of the Locked On Bears podcast. He's breaking down the Chicago Bears, one of the Giants' 2019 regular season opponents. I'm telling you, folks, if you've missed any of these series that we've been doing about breaking down the opponents, do check them out. They're on our library. Nobody knows their teams better than the Locked On hosts, and Lauren's doing a fantastic job, and very thankful that he took the time to come on with us. Lauren, let's turn our attention to the Bears offense. You mentioned, you know, that there were things that they could have done better. You mentioned the offensive line, the quarterback, the running game. Where's your biggest concern right now? And realistically speaking, where do you see the Bears offense taking the biggest jump between, you know, now and the end of training camp?
Well, everything with this Bears offense is coming solely on the shoulders of Mitchell Trubisky. The whole thing since they've drafted him has been building around him, giving him the coach, giving him the offense, giving him the weapons, the receivers. Now they got, you know, they think they're solid at the running back position. They've got some tight end depth, and they feel pretty good about an offensive line with some young talent on there. And it's all around this young quarterback. And we saw last season that Trubisky can flash greatness. I mean, he lit up the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in a 48-10 victory and threw like 5 touchdown passes in that game and really looked sharp. And then there are other times, you know, like against the Los Angeles Rams, where he really struggles and the defense is able to pretty well carry them to victories, but the quarterback position not necessarily at the level that they want it to be. So for him, it's about a little bit more of that consistency. And maybe you're not going to have as many of the higher highs, but a lot fewer of the lower lows is what the team is looking for. And there's this idea that perhaps the defense can't carry them forever and can't play like a number one defense every game or every season. So eventually, this quarterback needs to be able to kind of buckle down and lead this team on some, you know, big play moments, big drives at the end of games and put this team over the top rather than being a little bit more of a game manager. And I think last season, Matt Nagy allowed him to play more conservatively. You know what? Take the check down. Even if it's 3rd and 6, you know, throw it at the line of scrimmage to your running back and maybe he picks up 2 yards, but it's not a turnover and it keeps the ball moving and at least has a chance to be able to convert. It's not a sack. So, you know, I think maybe you'll see them open it up a little bit more now that Mr. Trubisky, what they're calling it is he's in 202 instead of 101 in learning Matt Nagy's offense. You know, maybe things can open up a little bit more that way. And I think some improvement is coming from the quarterback. It's just a matter of how big of a step does he take forward. I think a lot of Bears fans are expecting a very significant step forward with some pretty high expectations being put out there, honestly. But I'm a little bit more reserved on it. I think, you know, a little bit of a better season from him and the offense can take a little bit of a step forward. Maybe the defense takes a little bit of a step backwards, and that kind of leaves you somewhere a little bit lesser than last year, but not terrible either.
I was just going to ask you, you mentioned the expectations. I think I saw somewhere where actually the odds were they improved or something with Mitch Trubisky actually is a potential league MVP or offensive MVP. And I thought to myself, wow, that's kind of a huge step for him. Because this is what, it's just his 3rd season, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, and I think that was more a reflection of Vegas responding to money coming in rather than where he actually is. So I think the Westgate's sportsbook put out their initial round of odds, and it had Trubisky at 200-1, which was like well outside of the top 50, tied with Nick Foles and Leonard Fournette and a bunch of defensive players for MVP. And then like within a week, they jumped his odds up to 50-1 because I think they were getting a pretty significant flow of money on that. There are a lot of Bears fans that legitimately think Mitchell Trubisky could be an MVP candidate this season. I mean, we're talking 4,000 yards, 35 touchdowns. I mean, really establishing himself as one of the most productive quarterbacks in the NFL. I'm not in that boat. I don't think we've seen enough from him yet to say that that's going to happen. It's possible, but I'm thinking more like a, you know, 3,500 yards and 25 to 30 touchdowns, maybe if things are going real smoothly. But I don't think we're going to see this massive jump where he shows us a bunch of things that we haven't seen before. So I think that's a little bit more fan optimism and money talking rather than a Vegas perception of Trubisky actually, you know, going over the top.
Let's talk about his skill players. Now, you mentioned, you know, more consistency out of the running game, the receivers. I think, if I'm not mistaken, you guys traded a receiver to Philadelphia, I think, or a running back. It might have been a running back you traded.
Jordan Howard, yes.
Jordan Howard, you know, and then the tight end situation. I mean, so looking at the skill position players, I mean, did they get better? Did they get weaker? Where do they stand right now as opposed to, you know, supporting Trubisky as he enters his 3rd season?
Yeah, I don't know that they got like significantly better. They just kind of added more depth and gave more options, which is still a step in the positive direction. But I don't know that the net level of top talent increased all that much. I think they're again kind of banking on, okay, year two in Matt Nagy's offense, everyone should be more comfortable this time around. So, you know, they traded Jordan Howard to the Eagles, and that was sort of that was controversial in the sense that, you know, Howard is still a productive runner, but maybe not an over-the-top receiver. But the Eagles and the Bears run largely the same offense. Both were offensive coordinators for Andy Reid and Matt Nagy and Doug Peterson. It's pretty much the same system. But one of the two coaches says, oh, yeah, I've got a role for Jordan Howard in my offense. And Matt Nagy kind of pushes him away and takes a conditional sixth-round pick in a trade for, again, a running back on a rookie contract who's been a 1,000-yard rusher and was second to Ezekiel Elliott in 2016 for leading the NFL in rushing yards. So there was some controversy there as far as how much is Jordan Howard incapable versus how much is Matt Nagy perhaps failing to better utilize his running back. But regardless, he goes and gets his guy in David Montgomery from Iowa State. They feel like he can be more of an all-around threat. They'll work him in slowly, but eventually he's going to be that number one back. They signed Mike Davis from Seattle, another guy very good in pass protection, an underrated receiver as well, and they kind of think that between them and, you know, they can still get decent running game and be able to do a little bit more in the passing game as well. And then they added Riley Ridley, a fourth-round wide receiver out of Georgia, who's still going to jump in and be, you know, your fourth or fifth wide receiver, because they're just expecting, you know, Allen Robinson another year, a full offseason with the team, because last year he was recovering from the ACL injury he had in Jacksonville. So he kind of came in late into training camp and didn't have that full offseason to learn the system. So they're expecting, you know, he can look more like a number one wide receiver. Anthony Miller, their second round pick last year, he flashed with, I think, 5 touchdowns and some big plays, but he battled a shoulder injury all season. And the idea is year two for him, he can take that next step and be maybe their number two ahead of Taylor Gabriel, a veteran that they like as well. They signed Cordarrelle Patterson, formerly of the Patriots and the Raiders and originally the Minnesota Vikings, to be this wide receiver, running back, kick returner, all-around threat. So they've got a lot of guys and a lot of different ways that they can attack defenses. And it's this idea that Matt Nagy can put them all together and Mitchell Trubisky can find them the ball. And if that all works, they should, in theory, have a pretty decent offense.
Now, what about the offensive line? Because as we know, it all starts up front. What concerns do you have about the offensive line, or is it pretty much a solid unit?
It's a solid unit when they're healthy, and I think durability is it's not a huge concern, but there's just not a lot of depth there. That, you know, Kyle Long at right guard has, you know, he's a household name to some extent. He's probably the most well-known offensive lineman on the team, a leader, but he's on the wrong side of 30, and he's really struggled to stay healthy, and they don't have a lot of depth behind them if something's going to happen there. Their swing tackles right now are a former Minnesota Vikings cast-off, T.J. Clemmings, who was been pretty consistently bad in his career, and then another guy who's a converted defensive lineman, and those are their two backup offensive tackles right now. So it pretty much across the board, if they lose a starting offensive lineman to injury, they would be in a pretty tough spot, and if they lost two, they would really be desperate for help there. But when healthy, they're a solid, you know, they're not a top five offensive line, but they're, you know, they're in that top 15, top 12, maybe top 10, and they certainly get the job done. No concerns there.
When you look at the Bears' offense, if you're planning to attack them as a defensive coordinator, where is their weak spot?
Well, I think Bill Belichick put it well last year when the Bears played the Patriots. The Inside the NFL show on HBO had him on the sideline, and he said, you know, we'll let him beat us with his legs, but we're going to, you know, but he's not going to beat us with his arm. So, you know, we'll try and, you know, we'll let him leave the pocket and run if he wants to, but he's not going to beat us passing. And I think that's where teams are still going to try and get Mitchell Trubisky, is, you know, make him actually beat you with his arms, because he can run and he can pick up first downs, but when the pressure's on and he's in the pocket and he has to deliver a throw, he still has to more consistently prove that he can deliver an accurate ball downfield and keep this team alive in clutch situations. So putting some pressure on Mitchell Trubisky, giving him some different looks at the line of scrimmage, you know, getting him into those obvious passing situations, and just, you know, you can let him run around a little bit, but you can't let that completely take over. You kind of got to force him to beat you with his arm, because I don't think it's something that he has proven to be able to consistently do yet. So I would kind of look there as to, you know, put the quarterback in difficult situations and see what he does.
Is that more of a result of him, you know, being more likely to take off as opposed to making his reads? Does he struggle with reads, or why do you think he's more likely to, you know, want to take off as opposed to just hang in the pocket and try and find something?
Well, I think it's sometimes it's about taking off, but sometimes it's the structure of the offense as well. That sometimes Matt Nagy will give him plays where it's, you know, he's got his two or three reads, but if it's not there right away, then he doesn't have a lot else he can do with the play. And he's not at that point where he can do the Aaron Rodgers scramble around and, you know, direct traffic from outside the pocket and find somebody wide open. So, you know, some of it's the pressure coming in, but even when he's kind of thrown on the run, there's some issues there as well. So it's some of it's the system trying to make it simple on him, but when that simple isn't there, he can't create more out of it. Some of it is, you know, pressure and different overload looks kind of freezing him at times, and some of it's just an inexperienced quarterback who hasn't had a ton of starts in his football career, not always having that instant, you know, that instinct of knowing exactly where to go with the ball and really, you know, knowing the offense so deep that even when the pressure's there, he can think in an instant where his fifth read is going to be, skip ahead to that because he knows that's going to be open because of where the pressure's coming from or where the coverage has shifted. So some of that is expected to improve, but how much, that's the million-dollar question.
Lauren, based on what you remember of the Giants' personnel, and I don't know how closely you've been following their offseason moves, but if you had to list like one or two players on each side of the ball that you think would create headaches for the Bears, who would they be and why?
Well, I mean, Saquon Barkley gave the Bears plenty of trouble last year, and that's maybe the easy answer there. But, you know, even offensively, a guy like Evan Ingram, I think, can do some damage over the middle. The Bears like Roquan Smith and Danny Trevathan, but, you know, there's always room for tight ends to sneak in there. And it seemed like last year there were, even when it wasn't big plays, it was just sort of consistent gains of tight ends kind of squatting over the middle and offenses stretching the Bears out a little bit horizontally and leaving some space there as well. And maybe just Golden Tate in terms of being able to attack the slot, because I feel like, again, I think the Bears are going to be a little bit more vulnerable in that regard. And then when you flip it over to the other side, and I think a guy like Jabril Peppers can match up with a Tariq Cohen better than most, and the Bears really thrived off of Tariq Cohen being sort of that energy in their offense and some big plays mixed in here and there. So I definitely think Peppers is more equipped than a lot of other guys to win that way. And then, you know, even in the front, you know, guys like Dexter Lawrence and Dalvin Tomlinson in the middle, those are some real beef guys. And there were times last year when the Bears were struggling to get enough of a push from that offensive line, and they did a little bit of shifting around on the interior, and James Daniels and Cody Whitehair now are flipping from center and left guard, so, you know, maybe that can make a difference. But I do like the Giants' bulk on the interior and some of that speed in the secondary.
And then finally, you know, last year the Giants and the Bears met. They played each other tough. The Giants topped them in overtime. I know it's very early. The rosters are still being, you know, determined. We still have to get through training camp, see what the injuries are, but what's your gut feeling as far as how overall the Bears and the Giants match up against each other? Who has the advantage where?
Well, last year the Bears were without Mitchell Trubisky in that game. Chase Daniels had to play because of Trubisky's injury. So that was part of the issue for Chicago there. I do think the Giants are going to be an improved team from last season. I personally don't have a lot of trust in Eli Manning, but maybe by the time we're in, was it week 12, I think, when they play next year, maybe it's Daniel Jones under center, and that'll throw some things for a little bit of a loop. So I would still expect, you know, but that Giants offensive line continuing to get better and a guy like Barkley in the backfield, they're going to be able to play the Bears tough. And I don't think it's by any means going to be a big advantage one way or the other. But I think, you know, the Bears defense where it is right now and still trying to pick up from where they were last year, I think the Bears have some advantage in that regard with just if they can kind of maintain some of what they did last year. Barkley will get his yards, he'll get some of his plays, but again, I don't trust the quarterback situation a ton in New York to be able to really take advantage of this Bears defense. And then on the other side, I would have wanted the Giants to add a little bit more at the pass rusher. I mean, I liked O'Shane Zimenez from Old Dominion coming out of college, and you know, a guy like Marcus Golden can do some damage, but the Giants' pass rush doesn't necessarily scare me enough to feel like, okay, they're really going to bother Mitchell Trubisky. So, you know, I like the talent they have in the secondary, and I think they can definitely keep it close in both directions, but I do feel like I give the Bears a slight edge there.
All right, great stuff, Lauren. Before we call it a show, tell everybody where they can find all your work.
So you can follow me on Twitter at Cox Sports and the number one. It's like Fox Sports 1, but with a C. And I write about the Bears for NBC Sports Chicago and the Bears Wire.
All right, sounds good. Giant fans, make sure you check them out. And Lauren, we'll be probably talking, I'm sure, for the crossover show for sure. And we'll probably catch up, I would guess, you know, before the season starts. So listen, appreciate you coming on. Great stuff, the great breakdown, and we'll talk again soon.
Definitely count on it. Thank you.
All right, Giant fans, for Lauren Cox, this is Patricia Traynor. Thank you for tuning in to today's Locked On Giants. We'll be back later this week with more shows. So we hope you'll stay with us and have a good day.